Timothy, book of 2 Timothy. Timothy became Paul's very close associate during Paul's second missionary journey. Paul wrote two letters to Timothy. The first one he writes to give him some guidance and encouragement, Timothy being a young pastor. In the second letter, he writes as one who knows his earthly life is drawing to a close. He's in prison. He knows he's going to be killed. So he writes in 2 Timothy really with a greater sense of urgency. And he seeks to challenge and strengthen Timothy to be steadfast in the work of the Lord. And though Paul is writing to Timothy, the pastor, there's of course a lot here for pastors, can all directly be applied to them, but what he writes also is a source of guidance, encouragement, and strength for every child of God. In this second chapter is where we want to go this morning, 2 Timothy chapter 2. Paul uses several metaphors to paint a picture of what the child of God's life ought to be, what it ought to look like. For example, in verse 2, he speaks of the fact that our life ought to be one as a teacher. He told Timothy, teach others also. Well, that's certainly true of a pastor, but that should be true of every child of God. In other words, our lives should be instructive to others. Verses 3 and 4, he speaks of a soldier, and our lives should be lived with a very definite cause, a very definite purpose in mind, that of course being the Lord. Verse 5, he talks about those who run or an athlete, and our lives ought to consist of pushing and striving toward the spiritual. In verse 6, he mentions a farmer, and our lives should consist of waiting, depending upon the Lord to work. In verse 15, he speaks of a workman. That is, we ought to always be doing and working for the Lord. We want to read verses 19 to verse 21. Nevertheless, the foundation of God standeth sure, having this seal. The Lord knoweth them that are his, and let everyone that nameth the name of Christ depart from iniquity. But in a great house there are not only vessels of gold and of silver, but also of wood and of earth, some to honor and some to dishonor. If a man therefore purge himself from these, he shall be a vessel unto honor, sanctified and meet for the master's use, and prepared unto every good work. So leading up to these verses, Paul has used a variety of metaphors to picture our life. And then these verses that we've just read really are an extended metaphor or analogy, a parabolic-like message concerning the lives of God's people. And it is this that will be the main thought of the message. But we want to consider what we read in these verses in the light of a phrase in verse 19, having this seal, the Lord knoweth them that are his. From that phrase, We want to notice having this seal, having this mark, having this engraving, His. And that's our subject. His. His. When I read the Bible, I almost always get stuck, and I don't use stuck in a bad way, on a phrase or on a word. And I thank the Lord for that. The Lord gives me many blessings from that. But reading these verses and that word, His, what a blessing. I'm His. But I want to, first of all, we want to consider the context of our text. The very first word, nevertheless, makes us back up to see what went before. As we look at the context, we get a picture of the times and the circumstances that God's people were in at the time of the writing of this letter. It not only provides a setting for them, it provides a setting for you and I in which we're to live for the Lord. So just prior to our text, Paul wrote in verse 16, because the word nevertheless backs us up, he wrote of profane and vain babblings. And then he spoke of the danger of these profane and vain babblings, for they will increase unto more ungodliness. So what we have here is we have babblings, chatter. And these babblings were profane. That is, they were secular. They were irreverent. They were blasphemous. And they were also vain. That is, they were futile. They were useless. They were empty, serving no real spiritual purpose. Now, you and I today, of course, are bombarded from all sides with vain babblings, twisted and perverted, incessive narrative. We're bombarded with it. It's a narrative of denial of who God is. It's a narrative of blasphemy. It's a narrative of error. And the danger of this, we see in our text, is that they will increase. That is, there's an expansion, there's an escalation, an intensifying of ungodliness. Ungodliness is the opposite of godliness. Godliness is taking on God's character. Godliness is a state of devotion to God. Godliness is the impression and workmanship of God in a person. Godliness is the expression of God in our hearts. Godliness is an attitude of reverence. It's an attitude of respect. It's an attitude of devotion towards God. It's a delight in God. It's a recognition of God. It's a realization of God. It is being aware of God in every aspect of life. Godliness is an attitude centered upon God. It's the occupation of the heart for God. It is both a right attitude and a right response toward God. That's godliness. Godliness is an attitude of humility. Wherever there's godliness, there's humility. It's an attitude and spirit of affection. Wherever there's godliness, there's affection for God. Godliness is an attitude and spirit of dependence and submission and gratitude and obedience to God. But we read here in our text that these profane and vain babblings increase unto more ungodliness. In other words, there's an escalating of the opposite of what we've just talked about, godliness. And we see that in the day in which we live. Every single day, there is an escalating of ungodliness. It escalates day by day. And we're at the point right now, we think, I would have never thought. Wait. Another year from now, it'll escalate into more ungodliness. Because that's what profane and vain babblings do. So, in the context, you think about ungodliness. There is a people moving further and further from God. There is a people who are dismissing Him more and more from their thoughts, more and more from their lives, putting other things in the place of God, busying themselves in other pursuits. You know, people say, I don't want to go there. Placing more and more esteem upon earthly things, becoming more and more desensitized from the things of God. This is the escalation of ungodliness. And that's what was going on in our text. We see in verse 17 that not only do these profane and vain babblings result in the expansion and the escalation and the intensifying of ungodliness, but they're like a cancer. It says there that they will eat as doth a canker. That is, these profane and vain babblings, they're like a cancer. They spread. They consume. They eat away. They eat away faith. They eat away dependence upon God. They eat away values. They eat away morality. They eat away justice. They eat away integrity. They eat away that which is good and decent and beneficial. And this is what was going on. These profane and vain babblings were like a cancer spreading through their culture. And so it is. Here we are today, even to a larger scale than what we see in our text. Paul goes on to mention by name two such messengers of these profane and vain babblings. And he says in verse 18 that these two individuals have erred concerning truth. Have erred. They're false teachers. And the result of such is that they overthrow. They remove. They displace. They conquer the faith of some. Now, I believe this is a professed faith, but we're not going to get into that. So from all of this, we see it was a time of great spiritual decline. It was a time of great spiritual danger. But there's encouragement. And it's seen in the next phrase in verse 19. Nevertheless. That's an encouraging word. In the light of the context, that is an encouraging word. Nevertheless. What follows is, the foundation of God standeth sure. They overthrow the faith of some, but regardless, the foundation of God standeth sure. It's steady. So despite the unbelief, despite the fall of some, nevertheless, the foundation of God standeth sure. In other words, the foundation of God is nevertheless. That's always so. No matter what's going on in life, no matter what's going on in society, the foundation of God is nevertheless. And God is nevertheless. The foundation is this: the Lord knoweth them that are His. Indicating that those who had their faith overthrown are not His. But again, that's another message. He knoweth them that are His. This is always so. No matter who or what falls, the Lord knoweth them that are His. And then He proceeds to give an exhortation, I believe, to those who are His. Let everyone that nameth, that professeth the name of Christ, depart. That means withdraw from iniquity, that which is twisted, that which is perverted, everything that He's referred to leading up to this point. And then in verse 20, we have another encouraging word. But, in contrast to verses 16 through 18, but, and then that is followed by this extended metaphor in which three figures are used. There is a great house. That's one figure. There are vessels of gold and silver. That's another. And then, of course, there are vessels of earth. Wood and earth. Dishonor. So despite the fact that there's an intensifying of ungodliness, despite the fact that many's faith has eroded and been overthrown, there are some who are vessels of gold and silver. These are distinct from all else. These individuals are not spellbound and deceived by the profane and vain babblings. They're not deceived by these things. They do not err from the truth. They are not conquered by the fads and by the trends and by the ways and by the thoughts and by the pursuits of the world. So in this twisted and perverted world of the secular, there are the vessels of gold and silver. That ought to be us. Vessels of gold and silver. They're valuable. Even if you melt them down, they're valuable. They're useful. And they're durable. So we want to consider these vessels as a picture of our life. And concerning these vessels, again, verse 19, the foundation of God standeth sure, the Lord knoweth them that are His. So we want to look at these vessels in this light. They're His. They're His. We don't want to get away from that truth. His. In other words, they belong to Him. They're His. I believe that each of these vessels of gold and silver have this mark, have this engraving. His. His. Don't forget who you are. Don't forget who you belong to. His. You and I that are saved are chosen vessels. The Lord said of Saul of Tarsus in Acts 9, verse 15, he is chosen. Now, you all know what the word chosen means. It doesn't mean anything less when you come to the Bible. To choose is to select. To choose is to pick out from a number. It means there are others, but you have chosen this. Don't change language when it comes to Scripture just to fit a doctrine. Chosen, he is a chosen vessel unto me. Unto me. You and I are in this world, but we are chosen vessels with this mark, his. No matter what else is going on, nothing changes this fact. I am a chosen vessel. And I have this mark, his. We read in Romans 9, verse 23, of the vessels of mercy, which he had afore prepared unto glory. So in this world, you and I that are saved are a prepared vessel of mercy, destined for glory, and we have this mark, his. I'm his. These vessels are unto him. These chosen vessels, these vessels of mercy, are bought and paid for by him. 1 Corinthians 6, verse 20, for ye are bought. That means you're purchased. With a price. Anything purchased has to have a price. And in 1 Peter 1, 18 and 19, we see what that price is. The precious blood of Christ. He has paid for my soul. And I have this mark. His. His. Also, each one of these chosen vessels have been made different. Romans 9, verse 22. They have been made different from the vessels of wrath, fitted to destruction. There are vessels of mercy prepared, who were afore prepared for glory. That's you and I that are saved. And there are vessels of wrath fit for destruction. That'll never be saved. These vessels of wrath fitted for destruction are not the vessels of mercy afore prepared for glory. Two different vessels. And who makes the difference? God does. We are different by the design and the miraculous work of God, and we have this mark. His. This fact, his. It's how I'm to view my life. It's how I'm to view everything. His. This fact, his, is what is to shape my perspective. This fact, his, is what determines our purpose in life. It's what determines our priority. This fact is what should determine my passion in life. What should determine my desire in life. This fact is what should determine my pursuit, my course. It's what ought to determine all the choices that I make in life. His. We're all faced with choices. Don't forget this. You're his. You're his. And that should have everything to do with the choice you make. Nothing in our life is to be detached from this. His. Nothing. His. You may be a parent, but do not detach that from His. You may be a son or a daughter. Do not detach that from His. Whoever you are in life, whatever you do in life, do not detach it from this. His. You belong to Him. Never lose sight of that. You see, to be our own is the greatest ambition of our sinful nature. To be our own. To be our own man. It's my life. I can do with it what I please. We're His. That must get hold of us. That must be our conviction. I am His. It's something we must never lose sight of throughout our whole journey through this world, which is filled with profane and vain babblings. Eating away as doth a canker. And this world is filled with those who overthrow the faith of some. And we need to have this engraved upon us, upon our hearts, always before our eyes. I am His. I am His. I am His. Every morning we get up, His. As we go through the day, His. Whatever happens in a day, His. Nothing changes that. We're His. So these vessels that we ought to be, that we ought to desire to be, are described in verse 21. And what is described here is a way of life that should be our aspiration, that should be our goal of everyone who is chosen, bought, paid for, and made different for everyone who is His. So this fact, His, we need to view these vessels in light of this fact. They're His. And if we do, and if that's our conviction, we will be what is described here in verse 21. First of all, in order to be such a vessel of silver and gold, it requires a purging. It says, if a man therefore purge himself from these. The these we have to define. Because this life requires a cleansing, an absolving, a removing from these. From the corrupting influence of profane and vain babblings. You got to cleanse yourself from the profane and vain babblings. As children of God, there's going to be people, there are going to be preachers. There may be some who will stand in this pulpit as hard as we try, as hard as we guard against, who may preach a message of profane and vain babblings. You need to recognize such. Purge yourself from it. You need to purge yourself from the air that goes forth. You need to purge yourself from the wood and earth that is spoken of in verse 20, and that which is to a dishonor. Again, if a man purge himself from these, he shall be. He shall be a vessel unto. A vessel unto. And then Paul uses four modifiers to describe the vessel we ought to be. He uses the word honor. He uses the word sanctified. He uses the phrase meet for the master's use, and he uses the word prepared. Those four things describe these vessels of gold and silver. First of all, it is a life of honor, a vessel unto honor. That speaks of a life of virtue. It speaks of a life of purity. Every child of God should live a life of virtue and purity. It is a life of distinction, distinct from the vessels of wood and earth that are to dishonor. It is a life distinctly different from that which is disgraceful and shameful. As a chosen vessel of mercy with this mark his, I ought to yearn to live a life of honor. Why? His. Why should I live a life of honor? Because I'm his. You don't need any other reason. It is a life of sanctity. It says, a vessel unto honor, sanctified. That speaks of a life set apart for God. You have the profane and vain babblings. You have the error from truth. You have those whose faith is being overcome. And we are to be set apart from all of that, set apart for God, reserved for God, dedicated to God, set apart from that which is common, set apart from that which is ordinary, consecrated to God as God's possession and treasure, and for God's use, a vessel unto honor, sanctified, set apart. And this is to be a settled place, set apart for God. That may mean that you might not be able to take a promotion because I'm set apart for God. That might mean that you may not be able to move to your dream place because you're set apart for God. It puts everything in order. Set apart for God. That is a settled state. Nothing is to move us from that. Set apart from God. It is separate from all of that which is contrary to God. It is a life lived above the norm. It means that we are alive unto God. We're functioning unto God. We're active for God. Set apart. We don't mingle with that which is profane and vain. We don't mingle with the air. We don't mingle with those whose faith is overcome. Why? Because we're set apart. We're set apart from all of that. We don't get caught up in the things of life because we're set apart. So as a chosen vessel of mercy with this mark his, I ought to yearn to live a life of sanctity. Why? His. I'm his. We're not to divide ourselves up into 20 pieces. We're to be set apart for God. And how everything else fits into that, fine. But we're set apart for God. It's a life of suitability. A vessel unto honor. Virtue and distinction, sanctified, set apart, reserved, dedicated to God, and meet. And meet fit for the Master's use. Fit. That speaks of that which is suitable and appropriate unto God. A life suitable and appropriate for its greatest function. Notice that word for. Sanctified and meet for. The word for identifies function. This is for such and such. This is for such and such. You are explaining function. We are meet, we are to be fit for. What's our function? Use of the Master. That's our function. Why? His. I'm His. For. That means with regard to. Everything in my life is to be in with regard to the Master. It means on behalf of. Everything in my life is to be on behalf of the Master's use. Now think about that. The Master's use. For the utilization of the Master. My life is to be set apart and fit for the utilization of the Master. For the employing of the Master. For the operation of the Master. For the maneuvering and manipulation of the Master. That's the function of our life. For the service of the Master. Again, why? His. Because I'm His. My function is to be for His use. It's a life of availability. A vessel unto honor. Sanctified. And meet. For. With regard to the Master's use. And prepared. Which means ready, set, willing, inclined, prepared for what? Unto every good work. In the context, that is determined by the Master. We should always be ready, always set, always willing, always inclined, to what God would have us to do. Why? His. Because I'm His. Prepared. That means there's a plan, and the plan is to serve God. We preached on this once before. We need to plan to serve God. I believe people all week long plan not to serve God. We need to plan to serve God. When you make plans for the Lord's Day that keeps you out of church, you are planning not to serve God. You call it whatever you want. That's what you're doing. So we need to plan to serve God. It ought to always be our desire to be available to the Lord. Set apart. So that at any time the Lord may come along and use us in whatever way He sees fit. Prepared. Why? Because I'm His. Then notice in closing, He shall be a vessel. It's not just doing, it's being something. He shall be is the verb, He shall be a vessel unto. Moving in the direction of honor, sanctified, meet for the Master's use, and prepared for every good work. That is a life of beauty. That is a life that matters for the Lord. How sad it is when a child of God who belongs to Him and their life does not seem to matter for the Lord. We ought to want our lives to matter for the Lord. And in this day of profane and vain babblings and increasing ungodliness, in these days of spiritual erosion where the faith of some has been overthrown, we need to be a people that emerge from the madness, the crowds, the fads, the trends, the ways, the thoughts, the pursuits of the world, and be vessels of gold and silver, durable. And this is to be unto and for. Vessels of gold and silver unto and for Him. Why? His. We belong to Him. Don't ever lose sight. May that word stick in our minds every day. His. His. That's a simple word. Everybody can memorize that word. His. It needs to be a word engraved upon our hearts. His. I believe it is engraved upon us by the Lord Himself. That blood mark declares, I'm His. And my life is to declare to everyone, I am His. I am His. I don't belong to my family. I don't belong to my friends. I don't belong to a job. His. We must remember that. That must be our conviction. I'm His. And everything else, whether it be family, job, or whatever, everything else centers upon that. His. And it's that conviction that will lead to a life being a vessel of gold and silver. A vessel unto honor, sanctified, meet for the Master's use, and prepared for every good work. May that be our lives. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse song.